And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, it's the time of year when we give thanks. Specifically, we give thanks for Thanksgiving in pop culture. Gobble, gobble, gobble. We will talk about it all. And then from the big family gathering to the small one-on-one question, we'll talk about something we've really never touched on, the advice column. And as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I cover movies and theater and pop culture in general.
And we are without the services of Glenn Weldon this week. He has wandered off and left us. But fortunately, we are being visited by one of our favorites, Barry Hardiman. Yay. What do you do at NPR?
I'm an editor at Weekend Edition.
We are always so happy to see you, Barry.
I'm happy to see you guys.
Well, so the good thing we figured about the fact that Glenn is not here this week,
right,
is that Glenn does not necessarily love it when we sit around and give thanks.
Or experience happiness.
So let's all let's thank him right now. Thanks,
you know,
Glenn.
I'm thankful for my good buddy, Glenn Weldon.
I'm thankful for Glenn, yeah.
Who loves you, buddy?
I'm thankful, too.
I'm just sitting around having all kinds of feelings about it.
Also, Glenn, I fixed your chair.
Yes. Nice.
It's true.
So we did want to talk about Thanksgiving and popular culture. Now, what came to mind for me, and I don't always kick off, but I will kick off this one, is, to me, the TV show that I associate most with Thanksgiving is Friends. Because Friends used to have big Thanksgiving episodes sort of every year. They had one that was centered around the dinner that everyone was late to.
All right, come on. All right, you guys. We're so sorry we're late. Please let us in so we can have dinner together.
No. Everything's cold. The turkey's dried out and the stuffing's all soggy.
Yeah, and there's a bowl of cranberry sauce that... What happens to cranberry sauce?
Nothing. It's fine.
Oh, thank God.
Come on, you guys. We're sorry. Our subway broke down.
That's a lie. You went to the game. I can see Joey's hand.
For the love of God, take it off!
They had one that centered around the Geller Cup, which was a trophy that Ross and Monica would fight over in football, that going back to their childhood, which was actually a troll doll, attached to a little base.
I remember.
And that was the Geller Cup.
Well, every Thanksgiving, we used to have a touch football game called the Geller Bowl.
No. You say that proudly.
Anyway, Ross and I were always captains, and it got kind of competitive, and one year... Geller Bowl 6, I accidentally broke Ross's nose.
It was so not an accident. She saw I was about to tag her, so she threw her big fat grandma arm elbow in my face. Just kept running.
Just scored the winning touchdown, by the way.
Whoa. You did not win the game. The touchdown didn't count because of the spectacularly illegal... Oh, and by the way, Savage, nose breaking.
I won the game.
Oh, yeah? Then how come you didn't get the Geller Cup?
That's one where I always felt like they sort of made a big deal out of that holiday. The same way we've talked about, Roseanne with the Halloween ones. I felt like that was kind of what they made their big holiday that they returned to every year, partly because they liked those jokes about how Monica was the one who was trying to make the dinner and everybody was always fluttering around and complaining about what they were going to make.
Well, and that show is well situated to play on a lot of what is interesting about Thanksgiving from a pop cultural standpoint, which is family gatherings.
Right.
Anytime you can set up a family gathering, you bring in her delightful, her parents.
Sure. Guest stars.
Right.
You bring in cameo appearances.
You bring in cameo appearances and guest stars, and kind of tertiary characters can kind of come back and hijinks ensue.
Yeah. Endless opportunities for conflict and resolution and misunderstandings.
But other than the sort of family gathering, I actually was a little stumped to come up with lots of great examples of Thanksgiving in popular culture, and I was realizing Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
Me too.
Because it is food, it is football, it is sitting around, and it is...
The third of that was supposed to be family.
It is
food, it is football, it is sitting around
in my couch. My family couch.
Right.
Well, there's a certain amount of
sedentary lifestyle.
There's a certain amount of finding a big chair and kind of lapsing in and out of consciousness.
I'm sorry, how have we not mentioned the Rockettes yet? Do I have to be the gay guy and bring up the Rockettes? They always lead off the parade.
What is the Rockettes part of the Macy's thing?
Yeah, they always lead off the parade.
And yet I assume associate them with Christmas.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they're I think they're kind of kicking off their Christmas season, which is
right.
But when I have been a part of large family Thanksgiving gatherings, there is a certain amount of attempts to avoid contact that go on. And I think part of that is efforts to avoid watching the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which I have always found just
horrifying. I disagree with that. I think the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is what families watch so they don't have to talk to each other. I think that's the buffer.
But when you think about it, a lot of, and the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is a perfect example of this, a lot of Thanksgiving entertainment is designed to appeal to absolutely everybody in the multi-generational.
Kind of nobody.
Right.
And so, yeah, so there's a certain amount of it being a very, very bland, and I mean, in a kitschy way that you can enjoy, but I have just never really cottoned to the Macy's parade.
I've missed too many trains because of it, too. I mean, I literally remember one Thanksgiving coming home and saying to my mother, as though she'd, I'm sorry, I missed the train again. There was this parade.
Exactly. So the actual parade.
The actual,
you to miss
it, yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, you know, not it's hard to get to Penn Station when you're, you know.
It wasn't that you were so transfixed by the parade on television.
No, please, you know me. I would have been more transfixed by Macy's.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned this because I did just recently watch a Hallmark movie. This is my thing I'm doing now. I'm apparently watching all the movies on the Hallmark Channel. Don't ask. Something's happening. I don't know. And watched one recently that's called Love at the Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's not about
starring
the Macy's.
Starring Dean Cain.
The Macy's Parade. It's about the parade in Chicago, which is actually a McDonald's-themed parade, apparently. Although there are only small McDonald's product placements in the movie. But in this particular movie, you see, the point is that the city loves and needs the parade. And because, of course, the woman in the movie loves the parade and is like a guardian of the parade. She's
Is the man trying to shut the parade
down?
Yeah. It's like the You've Got Mail
construct.
The man is
around the corner.
Right.
Yeah. The man is kind of the one who's coming in to do budget cuts for the parade.
By the way, how sad is it that I think of You've Got Mail before the shopper on that.
Yes.
Well, I thought I was trying to show you up.
Thank
you.
Yes.
I win.
Mission
accomplished. But yeah, I mean, there's the parade. But there is also, I will say, a lot of shows have had Thanksgiving dinner themed episodes. I always talk about Sports Night, I realize. But there's a great episode of Sports Night where Dana is rehearsing for Thanksgiving dinner and she's thawing the turkey in the light board over where they're taping the show.
Why is there a 24-pound frozen turkey up in the light grid?
I'm thawing it out.
You're thawing out a turkey on the light grid.
Anybody got a problem with that?
Not me.
Not with me.
It's like a week before Thanksgiving.
This is just a dry run.
A dry run on the turkey?
My whole family's coming to New York, 18 people.
And this is your first time making the dinner?
Yes.
It's a rite of passage into adulthood.
Yes.
It's a time for giving thanks, a time to share in the warm embrace of family.
Right.
You don't want to take any crap from your mother.
I really don't.
You're doing the right thing.
I need to see how long it takes to thaw.
3 minutes in.
And at one point it falls down on the table. And ultimately there's this lesson about how she's trying to please her mother. And it's one of those things where the making of Thanksgiving dinner becomes a symbol of sort of you trying to please your family.
Yes, right. Yes. Like, this is always, I'm not with Stephen on Thanksgiving being the best holiday in the world, because in my family, there was a lot of pressure to do everything right, to make every dish that every cousin wanted,
right.
That because grandma had made it once and somebody liked it. So Thanksgiving and Christmas both sort of became stress centers for my mom. And it took me a long time to sort of get over that and learn how to enjoy the holiday again.
And it's interesting that you would say that, because my best Thanksgiving, this is going to sound terrible, but my best Thanksgiving was one year, we had a very small Thanksgiving. It was me and my parents, I forget who else was there. And my mother had her knee replaced, I believe. This was her first one. So she was off her feet. And so the whole thing was, I made the Thanksgiving dinner. I made the whole thing with my mom sitting there in the kitchen supervising everything. Mm-hmm. I made the turkey.
Just
I made the potatoes. I made everything.
Think about how traumatic that would be for like 99%. How well does that speak of your mother?
Very well. Oh, that was wonderful. We had a great time. And I made the, she has this cranberry salad she makes. So it works.
That sounds like a good plot for another movie, too. I want to just point that out.
But you can have it. But just stop and think about it. Like, how, if you have to make Thanksgiving dinner while your mother judges you?
Oh my God! Well, you're Jewish.
She was
sorry.
No, she was coaching me. She was like sitting there, and you know, I would bring over the pie crust, and I would say, "Does this look like it's right? Wow. Does this look like it's in the right?"
I'm just saying, Your mother is awesome.
But I think the point being, back to the popular culture, now that I've thoroughly violated the Zaxxon turkey rule, the point being, I think Thanksgiving in cultural terminology often stands in for kind of the loving and yet highly stressful, the right. stuff like Trey was talking about,
right.
that you
can
see them because it? You love them, but, you know.
Can I pause it because of that? That I thought, oh, you know what I'll do? I'll do books because I like to read. There are none. And then I thought about, you know, I was like, well, that's okay. I'll do Thanksgiving movies. And then I thought about it, and all the movies that I thought were Thanksgiving related, they don't exist. They're all Christmas related.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, except, of course, for Home for the Holidays.
Except
for Home for the Holidays right. is the only one.
Which is gruesome and morbid and horrifying.
And wonderful. And one of my favorite movies ever. But most of them don't. But I would sort of say that I feel like Thanksgiving exists almost exclusively on TV. And I wondered sort of why that was. I actually went through all my Laura Ingalls Wilder books and found that they were communists. They never celebrated, which they a little bit were, actually, now that I think about it. But they, you know, which they never celebrated Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful, like, sort of Home Alone style Louisa May Alcott one. There's
Home Alone.
But there isn't. It is. It's all the kids,
like that.
Almost shoot a neighbor and, like, make Thanksgiving. I'm not kidding. It is actually Home Alone.
I like it.
It really almost exists exclusively is the province of the sitcom, and I wondered whether you had anything to say about that because your TV smarts.
Well, the thing that fascinates me about that is there's so much culture around Christmas.
Yes, right.
That there are so many Christmas movies, Christmas TV movies, Christmas
right.
tropes,
and
Christmas
even though
cartoons.
And a lot of the
it's
tropes
the same stuff.
Are the same.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's
where
family
is
gatherings,
the, where
it's
is the,
disappointment. It's,
where is the animated turkey for
right.
today's consumer?
Well,
right.
that's a great point. You bring up a great point, which is that in animation, Thanksgiving-related culture often falls on the absolute most boring thing in existence, which is the pilgrims.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
And when I was thinking of...
They're not even fighting.
When I was trying to think of examples in my little watches a lot of cartoons world, you have, like, Charlie Brown, where they have the Charlie Brown characters, like, reenacting the journey of the Mayflower, and it is excruciating how boring it is. Mm-hmm. Pilgrims? Boring.
Right.
Well, you know, I was
Take
mentioning...
Take that, Founding Fathers.
Yeah, stick
exactly.
it, Pilgrims.
Puritans boring.
I was mentioning as we were preparing for this show that just about the only one I could think of really outside of sort of the big family gathering themed shows was the episode of the Brady Bunch where it was very early Brady Bunch, I believe, and Greg made this home movie where he had everybody running around in little pilgrim costumes and made it in the backyard. There's a bit at the beginning where it's supposed to be the Mayflower and it's a little toy boat in the bathtub. And that was because I was trying to think, like, did they ever do pilgrims? Do people ever actually do, I don't know. Maybe, you know, I was wondering whether it was because Christmas has so many sort of TV-friendly and movie-friendly ideas behind it, like we all get together at Christmas.
Well, there are all these decorations.
Whereas Thanksgiving has more of a kind of general sort of we're all going to be grateful. Mm-hmm. And it all gets rolled into Christmas.
Yeah, it's all congealed like so much cranberry sauce. I mean, it is actually, and this is the one other reference in literature that I found is a book that I've been pretending to read for years. It won the Pulitzer by Monsieur Philip Roth, who actually just quit writing this week, so we actually have a peg. But he talks about the thing about Thanksgiving is in his book American Pastoral, which won the Pulitzer, which I haven't read, and I will continue to pretend to have read. He says the thing that makes it so special is it isn't about nostalgia for the Jews or the, you know, the coming together around Christ, or there is no actual symbolism except for this symbolism of the coming together itself. There's nothing to really come together around except maybe
food. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And he talks about, you know, I think he says it is the American pastoral, hence the title, par excellence, and it lasts 24 hours. And it is that sort of, you know, this continuous thing, whereas even Christmas, you have, you know, Christmas morning or midnight mass.
Days of Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, these different, but this is this kind of, you know, it is a moment. It is really, really special in that way.
Yeah, and I also wonder whether the failure to create a big sort of cultural phenomenon around Thanksgiving has to do with the fact that we're already 2 feet deep in the cultural phenomenon of Christmas.
Yeah, I think you're right.
By the time Thanksgiving happens. I mean, frankly, the ABC Family and Hallmark Christmas season has already begun. They're already running 24-hour-a-day Christmas movies on some of those channels. For real, I know.
Oh, God.
Well, we started getting holiday albums back in July. Like, well, we always mark off, we always sort of save the date whenever we open our first holiday CD, and it's usually around July 4th weekend.
Yeah. Because,
you know, they start sending music to us like, with about a 3-month lead time, and we're already sick of it.
Yeah, I bet.
So here's a question. Thanksgiving culture, setting it aside for a moment, what is your, I look at all three of you when I say this, what is your stance on Black Friday?
Oh, my stance. Do it online. Oh, wait. Sorry. What are you asking?
What do you think?
As a shopper?
Black Friday, discuss.
Oh, my God. We're finally talking about shopping on the show. First Macy's now. My God, I love Black Friday. It's like,
really?
It is kind of, I mean, I hate all the stuff that happens around it, but it is actually, and this is really truly a subject for something else, but it is actually now become like a really great way to save money, especially online. We may have to cut this because I'm actually totally humiliated now. Somebody else talk.
I'm going to say it's partly manufactured. It's partly mass hysteria. But I think Barry's right. I think people are moving so much product with such elaborate loss leader discounts that if you shop intelligently, you can probably get a deal. It's not, for me, it's not worth the crowds.
I was
going to
say, I never go anywhere.
Waits.
Yeah,
I
always am online.
Yeah,
for me, I have a couple relatives who do the doorbuster 4 in the morning, although now it's like 2 in the morning.
Yeah, it is.
But
it's midnight. It's
that
so.
I would, I mean, I honestly.
What happened to Mass?
Anyone who knows me knows that if that were the only day of the year that you could buy anything and you had to brave those crowds to get it, I would simply live in poverty.
You would be
a monk. Because I have enough trouble going regular shopping in terms of crowds. Like, I already really prefer to do my shopping at about 1 in the afternoon on a Wednesday because of crowds. Now, I used to, this might be post-traumatic, I used to live like a quarter of a mile from the Mall of America.
Right.
And so, you know, I've been in the belly of the beast, as it were.
Yep.
And I've been Christmas shopping at the Mall of America. Not on Black Friday, because I'm not crazy. but I've been there.
Yeah, I was at Tyson's Corner to see a movie on Thanksgiving evening of last year.
Oh, when it was starting. Because they started it on Thanksgiving evening.
Yeah.
It was like Thursday.
But they still had the gates down on the stores.
Right.
But the mall was jammed.
Yeah.
As far as the eye could see. It was
a sea
of bodies.
I think there was a big thing about this last year. I might have even written about this last year, that it was very annoying that they were bumping it back to Thursday so that people were like getting up from Thanksgiving dinner. And,
right.
Yeah.
See, yeah, and I do not appreciate the whole you're done eating and then you have to go shopping. But I will say I do like, and I very often do Black Friday shopping, in part because my mother loves it. And if I happen to be around my mother on Thanksgiving, I will be with my mother on Thanksgiving this year.
Right. And she'll also probably buy you things.
And she might well buy me things, which is great.
Yeah,
which
I might go to Black Friday with your mother.
I might. Me too. Where are we going?
Let's all go.
What should I wear?
But all my traditions have changed in the last couple of years, and now my Thanksgiving tradition is to eat at the All Things Considered potluck. And I'll actually, the last couple of years, I have gone into work just to eat and then gone home.
Oh my God.
But this time I'll be in Wisconsin with my mother. And I have to say, I love the new thing where now it's midnight. Because when it was 5 o'clock in the morning, my mother is a morning person.
Mm-hmm.
And that means my mother will shake me awake at 4 o'clock in the morning, which I didn't know there was a 4 o'clock in the morning. But now that it's midnight, it's a matter of staying up late than that I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you might as well stay up all night if you're going to get up at four. No,
it's
I'm
true.
With you.
It's
That's
true.
I kept telling
you.
The baby. I'm like, why aren't we at a club? What's happening?
Sorry. I gotcha. Well, so I think what we would, what I would like is for all of you out there who appreciate Thanksgiving or perhaps don't appreciate Thanksgiving or perhaps can think of some movies or books that we forgot, because it seems like it's all fallen into a great deep hole, but it's got to be out there somewhere.
Oh, sure.
So come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and tell us all about your Thanksgiving traditions, your Thanksgiving culture, and whether or not we have missed the boat completely about the Thanksgiving Day Parade and the possibility of finding love therein.
There you go.
At the Thanksgiving Day Parade. So at this time of year, this is the time of year when your family gets together and perhaps they might give you advice, right? right?
Ooh,
great. I know.
The segue.
Nice. You really
or
made
you
that pie
need...
crust.
Really?
I loved it.
Wow. You might need some advice on how to deal with
exactly.
relatives
That's
you haven't
right.
seen
yeah.
in a
Actually,
while.
Actually, you know, yes. truthfully, I should have said that because it is true that holidays are a great popular topic for advice columns, which is the mm-hmm. other thing we were going to talk about today. I would say, you know, it used to be when I was growing up that you would have a couple of major national advice columnists, your Dear Abby and your Ann Landers, mm-hmm. perhaps your Miss Manners, mm-hmm. who
oh,
I've talked before about
favorite.
How much I adore Miss Manners.
I You've read her
stolen,
at my wedding.
You have stolen my topic.
Of course. Well, hey,
me too.
Of course. But I sort of feel like the age of the internet has kind of expanded advice columns mm-hmm. into, they've kind of been thrown
crowdsourced.
Open. And, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Trey, why don't you talk a little bit about, you want to talk about Miss Manners?
Well, no, I think it's true that there are certainly more voices out there because there's an infinitude of voices out there.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, there are some more prominent names who've come up, like Dear Prudence at Slate. Mm-hmm. Dan Savage has mm-hmm. become a powerful force on topics that might not have been addressed in
right.
previous eras.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I was going to, the example I look to as the sort of exemplar of advice columnists is Miss Manners. You know, and technically it's an etiquette column, mm-hmm. but it's not about forks. It's not about
right.
handshakes.
Miss Manners,
not about
it's
curtsies.
Not about
I mean, she's quite honestly a philosopher. She,
oh, she
unpacks.
Is.
She
and
unpacks,
a psychologist.
Yeah.
yeah.
She unpacks questions of etiquette so that you understand the morality of what informs her answers. Mm-hmm. And it's about a way of living kindly and generously mm-hmm. so that you make others feel better and improve your own life as a process. She's
yeah.
also hella funny.
She is.
Yeah, she's adorable.
She is. And I think she has the thing that many people think an etiquette column might not have, which is she has priorities
mm-hmm.
that are
very
much straight in terms of, like you said, it's not about using the right fork. It's about, do you make other people feel comfortable
yes.
and welcome, and are you accepting right. and loving? You know, I think she's the one. I think we've talked before about how she had that great answer to the question about what do I say when I'm introduced to a homosexual couple.
And
she
the answer
said,
is, how do you do?
How
do you do?
she's just such a, like, obviously such a sort of thoughtful person, mm-hmm. and I'm a big fan of her. But I also, on the sort of other end of the spectrum in terms of tradition, some of you know that my friend Sarah Bunting, who writes at Tomato Nation for many years, she doesn't do quite as many letters as she used to, but has had this advice column called The Vine, where the thing I've always admired about The Vine is that Sarah is perfectly willing to take the person who writes and asks for advice and say, you're the problem, which I always think is missing from a certain, you get these advice columnists where the person will write in and say, my boyfriend's terribly unfair to me because blah, 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 blah. And they seem to take it all at face value.
Right.
That if you say your boyfriend's mean, then he's mean. Whereas what I always liked about The Vine was her ability to sort of say, like, the problem is you. There's a classic, and I will link to it on the blog. But there was a letter where this woman wrote in, was like, what am I going to do about my, I think it was boyfriend's mother, so possibly future mother-in-law. She's so awful. And I said this thing about how I don't like breeders. And she just got all upset. And she's so picky. And she just gets all. And so, you know, Sarah's answer was like, you should be glad she didn't slap you in the face. My mother would have thrown you out of her house. It's a great answer. And I think it's very important in advice columnists to have the ability to not always assume that the person writing the letter, just because they're the one whose perspective you're getting, is automatically right.
right.
Yeah, I think Savage Love, you know, mm-hmm. Dan Savage's column, he's another one who will sort of call BS on, mm-hmm. on people and really dress people down when necessary, which I do think is part of it. And you know, I think in general with advice columns, I mean, what you're really going back to for is an overarching philosophy. And mm-hmm. I actually, you know, when I worked at the AV Club for 12 years, and mm-hmm. for about 10 or 11 of those, we ran Dan Savage's column.
Mm-hmm.
And so every week I would pick through and copy edit and sort of format and everything that drafts of it. And so I've managed.
Well, I bet you know the copy editing and of a lot of interesting terminology.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say.
I did the same thing for a year at the City Paper yeah. here in D.C.
Oh, believe me, the number of things where I can tell you whether it should be one word or two. it'll come in handy again sooner or later. Probably not at NPR.
Yeah, probably later.
But I found, because I would have to look very closely at every one of his columns for over a period of years, and you find when you sort of get the first look at each column, you're immediately going through, as you read the letter, you think, what's he going to say?
Yeah.
And one of the neat things about that is you really do start to learn how to apply someone else's philosophy
right.
to a lot of different situations.
Right.
And
yeah.
so what you're really looking for in a good advice columnist, and it should be noted, I am just now starting to write an advice column for NPR Music, mm-hmm. running on the All Songs
Which
Considered
is not
blog.
The reason why we
not
picked this topic.
Well, it does make a fine peg.
Yeah. This has been on our list for a while. So
what is the most important thing for an advice columnist to have is a consistent philosophy. And obviously, you want to be adaptable and you want to change with the times, much as advice columnists who've written for 50 years have gone through many changes in social mores and whatnot. But you still want to apply sort of the way you guys were talking about Miss Manners, where she has an overarching philosophy of being kind to others and that all these things are about being gracious toward other people. I like it when advice columnists have kind of a consistent worldview that they are applying to many different situations. And I would say in Dan Savage's column, it's the idea of being GGG, good giving and game.
Right. And which he defines in a very specific way.
Right.
And I would say, I mean, I think we've talked, I think Stephen, you and I have talked about this before occasionally, is I think he has a very coherent philosophy of life, like you're saying. He has a very coherent, understandable, overarching philosophy. I don't agree with a bunch of pieces of it.
Right.
But you recognize it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is easy to mark out the contours of his worldview.
Exactly.
He can be a little unforgiving sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, about certain things. I mean, Stephen mentioned the whole idea of, you know, of being game, quote unquote, as he calls it, which to me always takes on this attitude of like, if one person wants to, say, do the tango and the other person doesn't want to, then the person who wants to do the tango is being unfairly impinged upon if they don't get to do it.
Right.
Whereas the person who doesn't want to do it should have to do it to be a nice person.
Right.
That's a value judgment. You may feel those two things are equal. You may feel one has priority over the other. But it's a very specific worldview to say that it's worse to be deprived of something you want to do than it is to have to do something you don't want to do. It's,
right.
You can agree with that or not,
right. And he applies,
but that's what we're talking
universally.
About.
Right.
Decidedly not a Puritan ethic.
I'm not a Puritan. What are you talking about?
Not a pilgrim.
Didn't say that.
I was raised Quaker,
didn't
not
say
Puritan.
That. I didn't say that.
Well, what? We're getting closer and closer to the pilgrims.
I know. They did not like to tango. I promise.
The point I'm making is only that that is a philosophy,
yes,
right,
that some people share and some people don't. But
yes.
I agree with Stephen that what makes that column work is you can recognize him applying that
yep.
same philosophy to letter after letter after letter. And the times when people get angry at him and get upset with him and frustrated with him are times when they feel like he doesn't apply it mm-hmm. the same way mm-hmm. to every situation with every person. And that's where you'll see people pick it apart.
And he has addressed, you know, he has addressed the sort of inconsistencies in his worldview in, you know, interviews that he's done,
right.
You know, because he's, you know, written a bunch of books, and, you know, he has this book called Skipping Towards Gomorrah, but there are things that he doesn't approve of that he then has to answer for.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
Because the book is all about being very forgiving, it's very forgiving toward vices, but then there are vices that he doesn't cotton to.
Right.
But I think the point is that you do find the most success as an advice columnist when you have a coherent view. Which is why the thing that's interesting to me, as I think Trey alluded to earlier, is that more and more of them you see a lot of crowdsourcing. You see
right.
a lot of ones where really what you get is either there's an answer from an advice columnist or there's none.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just get like 100 people giving an answer. And then you sort of suss out how is that community coming out on a particular kind of question too.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of places where people do that. They do that at Slate and the Dear Prudence, but they do it in a bunch of other places.
Ask Metafilter. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's sort of the way that critics often become, the role of the critic is often to cull.
Mm-hmm.
And the role of the advice columnist often is the same thing. If you're picking
yeah.
from a group of crowdsourced answers to present the most interesting response to a question.
Right. I mean, there are a bunch of different, you know, as you said, you're doing one about music. There are advice columns about any manner of things. And they get very specialized in certain places. There are ones about pets and, you know.
But I think the ones about right and wrong are often very, that you know, that's,
right.
It's an eternal subject.
Well, you got to love a column about pets where you're going to have a lot of right and wrong as well. I mean, that actually is, seriously,
oh,
that's,
yeah.
I love the really specialized
oh, yeah.
columns that,
yeah.
you know, because then you do have the moment of like, oh my God, I can't afford to keep this pet alive or whatever, which
right.
is very
yeah.
much
yeah.
we're still in
there,
the
There was a very wrenching exchange
yeah.
on, Stephen mentioned Ask Metafilter, which is one that I read a lot. And there was a very wrenching exchange on there at one point about a person who had a dog that was biting people and was trying to figure out what is my obligation to yeah. the dog versus what's going to happen
son.
To the
just
dog.
Kidding.
And so, you know, people do get into these very, that's kind of where you learn what people are super passionate about a lot of
so
times.
So what do I do about the fact that my cats are urinating everywhere?
See, that's my,
Sarah,
that's stain removal.
That is
that's
so my life right now.
Column.
My
Sarah
kids?
Used to do
great.
Cat questions on the vine.
My
so.
Kids are great.
Yeah.
The kids are great. The cats,
they don't pee anywhere.
Cats, the kids,
that
kids are peeing
kids are
in exactly the right places.
I'm so glad to hear the kids are completely house trained.
Oh,
wow.
Barry, it gets better.
I'm so excited.
little savage callback.
I love it. Woo!
The kids are trained.
What happened there?
Lots of urine. Really. Sorry, Miss Manners, who is also my favorite.
But, poor Barry.
Yeah.
I believe that a cat behavior specialist would tell you that you're not spending enough time with them.
Yes, I do neglect them, but they deserve it because they pee everywhere. It's a chicken
and
egg.
All right.
You know, you have to just remove whatever. We actually had a table removed from the house that our cat had just soaked.
Well, you talk about
culling. We were like, we had to get a contractor involved.
Stephen wouldn't have anything left in his.
You talk about culling. The cats are doing a great job. I'm becoming more and more of a minimalist because of all the stuffed animals and blankets that are getting thrown away.
This is really degenerated.
It really has.
At any rate, we would welcome, your reflections on advice columns and your favorite advice columns. And as always, we will link to Stephen's advice column, and I know that he would welcome your music questions.
Well, and I have to say, talk about crowdsourcing.
Yeah?
The way I got the questions to start the advice columns, on the Facebook page for Pop Culture Happy
That's
Hour.
Right.
God bless you,
That's
people.
That's right.
Which is at where?
It is at facebook.com/PCHH. We've now given it out twice, people.
Awesome.
So what more can you possibly ask of us? And that brings us to our final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Well, I was going to say that one of the things making me happy is all the amazing questions I got on the Facebook
page. I heard you say the cats peeing everywhere.
It is not the cats peeing everywhere.
Urine.
You know, a couple things. One, so simple. The fact that there are commercials again.
Yeah.
That there are commercials for product and services. I have never been so happy to see commercials for products and services as I am after...
To see a Mentos ad.
To see a Mentos ad after just wall-to-wall...
We saw one. I was watching TV with Stephen, and we saw one that had this, like, swelling music, like, yeah. No, and I was like, oh, no! But then it was, like, post-traumatic, and we looked up, but then it turned out that it was, like, some charity.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's fine. That's allowed.
Nobody's good name was being besmirched.
It was like Troy Aikman for some hospital.
Yeah. and Troy Aikman wasn't like, Steve Young is saying that the world... Yeah. Anyway, the election is over, and there are no more commercials.
Yeah.
Oh, And the other thing is the end of the year means it's year-end best of season. Mm. And the fact that over at NPR Music, we are currently dredging through the year in music and picking the stuff we like. And it is such a delightful time of year because it involves looking at the best in us. And that's what the end of the year is for.
Have the music team meetings devolved into hair pulling yet?
No. Also, that is also making me happy. Last year, the end of year meetings of the NPR music team to talk about the year in music, there was almost bloodshed.
Let's just say the process was flawed.
It was. And we have fixed it, and it's so much better. And I hope that the happiness shows up on the page.
I just hope we hear less yelling.
Did you fix it with medication? How did you fix it?
I am currently much better medicated for those meetings.
We can do that.
Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
In the spirit of Thanksgiving, I just wanted to say that I am happy about my particular plans for Thanksgiving Day because they involve a feast choreographed by no fewer than 4 professional chefs. Two of them were trained at the Culinary Institute of America, and 2 nicer guys I do not know. Now, you are going to object here that I am violating the Zaxxon rule.
We've been violating it all over the place.
I have an escape hatch. Because what's actually making me happy in the larger sense is the tradition, which is practiced here in D.C. and in many places far and wide where people aren't able to get home to their families, of the orphans' Thanksgiving.
Mm. Yeah.
Because while there is certainly a lot of special about seeing mom and dad and the cousins and whatnot, if you can, there is something truly... There is something truly wonderful to me as a member of a community where the concept of your chosen family is a very powerful and important thing, especially in particularly formative times of your life, about spending the holiday with some of those people. Orphans Thanksgiving.
Of course.
I'm a big fan of the Orphans Thanksgiving. In the last, those all things considered potlucks are a dream come true. But
that's
this
where
year,
Stephen's kids are going.
Also, while I'm on the shaky side of the Zaxxon rule, I played in the Trivia Bowl for the DC chapter of the Asian American Journalists Association last night, and my team won.
Hooray.
So I am the proud co-possessor of the Lamp of Knowledge, which is an actual trophy.
Oh my God. Is it an actual lamp?
It's a little trophy with a little lamp on the top.
That's wonderful.
Well done.
I love that. I love that. Congratulations, Trey Graham.
Thank you.
Barry Hardiman, what's making you happy this week?
Well, I'm actually thrilled since the last time I was here, what was making me happy was an extremely lowbrow TV show to say that Anna Karenina is making me happy this week. And it's making me happy on so many levels, and some are kind of lowbrow. One, I actually really like the Banana Republic hat. That fur hat is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Their Anna Karenina line. Two, for real, all kidding aside, I used to have a feeling when a book that I loved, and I actually have read this one, was made into a movie. I used to have that crushing feeling of like, oh no, now everybody's going to have their paws in it. Now, this is obviously a book that's been made into a movie a billion times, mm-hmm. most memorably, I think, with Vivian Leigh and Ralph Richardson. But I really love that our culture continues to remake and redo these things in such wonderful way. I haven't seen it. I'm looking forward to seeing it on Wednesday.
I have seen it, and we have talked about it on the podcast.
Oh, have you? I'm sorry.
So No.
Your enthusiasm for it is absolutely something I would second.
Oh, good. How about the fur hat? Would you third?
The costumes are so fantastic.
But I also want to use this also as a moment to say that this is one of also the... I love seeing it in period, quasi-period. I can tell there's maybe more feathers than we would have normally seen. But I also... a wonderful, wonderful book that I read a couple years ago updated it to the Russian immigrants in Queens. Mm-hmm. It's called What Happened to Anna Kay? It's by Irina Rain. It is a wonderful book. I reread it this week in preparation for all things Anna Karenina, fur, novels. It's so exciting.
It's
go
happening.
Read it. I can't wait. Anyway, back to you.
Wonderful.
I can't wait to see what the men's Banana Republic line looks like. I'm going right to the internet.
I know. Lace.
Ruffles.
Well, I have two things this week. The first, continuing on Barry's movie reference, I saw over the weekend Silver Linings Playbook, which has Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence in it, and it's directed by David O. Russell, who did The Fighter and I Heart Huckabees and a bunch of other stuff. And Bob Mondello saw it in Toronto and really had liked it a lot. It won the Audience Award in Toronto. It's very good. It's one of those. It is about two people who are both struggling with mental illness, which to me is kind of a trap. It's one of those things where it's like, please don't make it cute. Please don't make it cute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think they stay out of that. And the lead performances are really, really terrific. I liked it a lot.
I loved that book that it was based on. I think I may have reviewed it for NPR. I loved the book and I was wary about the movie.
The
so
movie
I'm thrilled
is a little bit.
This.
I think you will find the movie more Hollywood than the book. The plot
well, it
is,
came from there.
The plot is fussed with and the ending is more Hollywood and stuff like that. But I think the lead performances are really strong and I enjoyed it a lot. So that would be one thing. The other thing is, in the great tradition of sometimes plugging things that our friends did, I'm just going to mention, as I have on Twitter a couple times, that my friend Alan Sepinwall, a terrific, terrific TV critic.
I love
critic,
him so much.
Has just released, it is now out for Kindle, but it will be out for additional electronic formats and in paperback before the end of the year, a book that he wrote called The Revolution Was Televised, The Cops, Crooks, Slingers, and Slayers Who Changed TV Drama Forever. And what he did is he wrote 12 chapters about sort of the 12 shows that he feels drove this transition in television, which many people will say beginning with The Sopranos, but really Oz was before The Sopranos. Mm. So his first big one chronologically is Oz. So The Sopranos, The Wire, up to Mad Men, Breaking Bad, but also Buffy, Battlestar Galactica, Lost. And what he did, you know, Alan has been writing about TV for a long time, and he knows a lot of these people, the creators and also the executives and people like that. So he went around, he talked to everybody. He's got these great sort of histories, and they're mixed in with criticism. So it's sort of a mixture of reporting and criticism so that he talks about sort of this was the season where this story was really strong. Here's how they talk about how it got started. Now, when I first talked to Alan about this book, he was looking to publish it sort of conventionally and stuff like that. But, you know, ultimately he decided to go with self-publishing. So this is not only a terrific book, but it is a story of sort of what is happening now where people who have their own following, who have their own social media sort of, you know, ways of getting the word out, have the ability to do self-publishing. He did it through Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately going to be available in, you know, perfectly normal formats, ebook and also ultimately paperback. Published it himself, and it's absolutely terrific. And not just sort of his buddies and pals and friends are saying that, but, you know, it's being talked about by a bunch of the people who created a bunch of the shows that he talked about. just about everybody talked to him for this book, and the people who didn't, like Joss Whedon, I think, was too busy, believe it or not. You know, he had a bunch of archival interviews that he had done with Joss Whedon before about Buffy and about other stuff, so he's able to draw on a bunch of that material. You know, David Chase, I think, loves Alan and has talked to Alan about The Sopranos a million times, and so you get these really cool, awesome, rich interviews. So I extremely strongly recommend the book if you're interested in this kind of thing. There's not enough really good TV scholarship going on, and the book is just really, really good. Again, The Revolution Was Televised, it's called, Alan Sepinwall. So that's making me happy this week. Terrific book. Awesome. And I am thanked in it. Whatever.
These are my two favorite TV writers right here, Sepinwall,
Let's
Holmes.
Let's get him on the radio,
it's
man.
It's happening.
Let's get him
I'm
on
serious.
The radio,
When
man.
I found out that you knew him, my brain exploded.
He's my pal. He's
the thought of hearing you two talk together
terrific.
Is makes my hair terrific.
Terrific.
For a hat.
That, we should make that happen.
We
yes.
should make that happen.
And I
maybe
get
we'll
to
have
watch
him,
it.
Maybe we'll have him on the show.
I love that.
At any rate, that is what is making me happy this week, Silver Linings Playbook and my friend's book. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me in the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Barry at B Hardiman, HARDYMON. You can follow our pal Glenn Weldon at GH Weldon, WELDON. You can follow our producer Jess Gittner at Jess Gittner, GITNER. You can follow our esteemed producer Emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you next week.